The first set of lectures in this first module from the second year in level two. Welcome back to Dundee. I'm sure you're all thrilled to be back. As you've probably discovered, you're in the worst lecture theatre in the whole university. I don't know why they put it on us. This place has improved a little bit. We don't have a smell of gas any longer. At least you
have to be wonderful lights. Each question has no relationship.
The module in the second semester, the perception and development module. For starting reasons, we've switched around, so I'm giving my set of lectures in this first module. When you come to look at past exam papers, you will discover that I don't appear on this module, but I'll give you some sample exam questions so you know the sorts of things we've been asking in previous years. So don't get puzzled if you go looking at past exam papers. This section is going to be looking at cognitive development. Working, that's amazing. And these are the main topics that I'm going to cover in the next 10 classes. We're going to focus initially on a key theorist in child development, Jean Piaget. He's a Swiss psychologist, enormously influential. In fact, he really established the research agenda that we are still following today. So a very important theory. His work has touched on pretty well everything. He died some years ago, in the late 1980s. But we're going to look at his structural theory of development. This morning I'm just going to give you a brief outline of his theory. And then we'll move on and look at more recent work, following up on his ideas, and also extending and changing them. We're going to look at work in infancy, infant cognitive development. We're going to be studying perception, memory, and attention. Start with that tomorrow. We're going to look at individual differences in cognitive abilities between babies, how you can measure them, and whether they can predict later outcomes in childhood. And we're going to look at the development of cognition. Then we're going to move on to the preschool years, and we're going to focus our attention on two important developments in the period from roughly 2 to 5 years of age. The development of what's known as a theory of mind, the child's understanding of his or her own mental processes, but also mental processes and thoughts in other people, how they come to understand what a mind is and the nature of other people's minds, a crucial set of development. We're also going to look at the development of thinking in that period. And then finally, we're going to look at school-age children up to around the age of 10, 11. And we're going to look at two aspects of development. One that Piaget first identified, development of conservation, nothing to do with greed issues, but the understanding that certain physical properties of the world remain the same, even though appearances can change. you can scatter a set of Smarties on the table and the appearance will look very different depending on how we fall, but the number is always the same. How do we come to understand that? This is the principle of conservation. And also we'll be looking at the development of thinking and reasoning in this period. How children begin to grapple and understand the nature of logical thought. So that's the overview, that's what we're going to be studying. As textbooks, I'm recommending this book by Dave Yorkland, which is in the library. There are lots of copies in the library, so everyone should be able to get hold of it. We're not going to use all of it because we're not covering everything, but we are going to use a lot of it. And it's extremely well written. Dave Yorkland's a very eloquent writer and explains it very clearly. There is an earlier edition, this is the fourth edition, there was an earlier one, the third edition. We also have lots of copies of that in the library. If you get hold of that, and it's also cheaper on Amazon, if you get hold of that, then you can use that as well. There are some changes, and I'll give you information about the where to look for the relevant sections in the two editions. Two other books as well, these are older, but also very well written. There's a book by John Claymore and Patty Scott Miller, who later came on and edited, produced the fourth edition, extremely well written, again, it's available in the library. And also, there's a book by Usha Goswami. A new edition has just come out, published this year, but this earlier one, there are lots of copies in the library, an excellent book, and I'll direct you to the relevant section. Just a word on the readings, all of these materials are available on my domain. So you can go to my Dundee, you can download a PDF copy of the lecture notes, which will give details of the readings, and a summary of all the slides that I'm using. So you can do that before each lecture. Okay, I'll post this a couple of days before I give the lectures. Also, you can download copies of the PowerPoint presentations, either as a PDF file or as PowerPoint. If you don't have PowerPoint on your computer, you can always use a university machine. Or you can download a PowerPoint viewer, all that is explained in the first handout, the first set of lecture notes. Also, I'm going to be using video and audio clips, so you can download those as well if you want to view them. And there'll be other references, there'll be PDF files to one or two useful articles, so you can get all those from my domain. And finally, I've put a PDF file, one page, which are free readings, the relevant chapters and sections from Bjorklund's book, both editions, for each of the lectures. So if you want to do a little bit of reading before each lecture, then you can download that file to see what's coming up. Okay, so all of that is available. If you have any problems, then all you have to do is contact me and let me know. Before I start, though, maybe I should just say a little bit about myself, what I do. I'm a developmental psychologist, as you probably guess, I study children. I spend a lot of my time working with infants and toddlers, falling around on my hands and knees, and typically studying the development of thinking and problem solving. And we'll be looking at the development of thinking and problem solving in later classes. I also do work with a group of colleagues at Nine Worlds on the development of problems associated with prematurity, preterm birth, and low birth weight. And in fact, we're delighted we just got a very huge grant from MRC to look at the development problems that kids have, infants have, with production of thyroid hormones essential for normal brain development. And there's concern, a lot of infants don't get enough iodine in the first, preterm infants don't get enough iodine in the first 2 days of life. So we've got a randomized study where we're going to supplement infants with iodine or placebo and see 2 years later when we can detect improvements in cognitive abilities in supplemented kids, which is my part of this study. And finally, the other thing I do, and I spend a lot of time on this now, is look at the effects of nutrition on cognitive development, in particular the role of omega-3 fats. People familiar? You've heard about omega-3 fats? Been getting a lot of press recently. Some of it justified, some of it undeserved. We'd be very interested in the importance of omega-3 fats in baby's milk, the effect they have on development. And in fact, at the moment, we're doing a study on infants, but with school-age kids, in Cardiff and Newport in Wales. It's the largest study, but the first study to look at whether providing supplements of omega-3 fats will improve the attention and learning in normal school kids. So we've just finished that study. We've just finished testing the kids. We're getting the data at the moment. So fingers crossed we're going to see something, maybe by the end of the module I'll be able to tell you. So that's what I do. I spend my time fooling around with young children studying their cognitive development. Well, what are you going to be doing? Well, this is what you're going to learn about today. I'm going to talk about again stage theory. I want to give you a little bit of background, tell you who he was, and give you a little feel of what his theory is about. We're going to look at the characteristics of each of the stages. We're going to look at the important features of his theory. And then we're going to start exploring the very first developmental stage he talked about, the sensory motor stage. That's the period of infancy from birth through about 2 years. Oh, that clock's ticking on, I hope. I'll see it before I finish. We can get that clock put right. That's a little challenge. This university is notoriously poor at fixing things like this. Oh, right. So we're in infancy. We're going to look at the main characteristics of infancy. You're going to find out that Piaget thought babies were born with no knowledge of the physical world at all. And we're going to look in the next few lectures to see whether that in fact is correct. We're going to see that he thought their behavior was egocentric, self-centered. Well, egotistical, not selfish, but self-centered. I'll explain what that means in a moment. And also, he thought that babies didn't have the ability to use mental symbols. They couldn't use mental representations. They didn't have a little mental map of the world. They didn't have symbols that could represent numbers. They obviously don't have language, and so on. And that obviously is a very pessimistic view of the way it started out in life. We're going to see whether it's correct or not. So there he is, just here in his last few years. He was a prolific researcher. He started publishing in the early 20s, and he published thousands of articles and many, many books, and he's had a huge influence on development. His was the first coherent theory of how development occurs, and he made numerous discoveries about the abilities and failures and good errors that young children make. In fact, he started out working in Paris in Alfred Binet's laboratory, and he got really fed up with all the routine testing and development, the first IQ test for children. And what he got very interested in was all the curious errors that children make. And what he noticed was they're systematic. You see the same kinds of errors being made at around the same ages by children coming from very different backgrounds. And he was very curious about why he did that. And that was the basis of his theory, which argues that children start with no knowledge whatsoever and gradually construct an understanding of the world, but it's imperfect until, you know, they reach adolescence or the adulthood. It develops. And what he argued is that development is rather like going up a staircase. You spend time moving up to the next step, you spend most of your time on these steps, but then at regular intervals, at regular periods in development, the child moves to another step on the staircase. Here's the first step. It's the sensory motor period. This is infancy. And for Piaget, children learn about the world around them through perceiving what's going on, seeing, hearing, touching, and acting on the world. So everything they know involves perception and action, sensory motor. One thing is missing, and what is missing is the ability to use mental symbols, to have a mental symbol which can stand for something else. A word, a number, a place. Infants, according to Piaget, lack this key symbolic function. That's what marks out a new step on the staircase, children beginning to advance. And when children begin to acquire mental symbols, they can construct them and can begin to think with them, Then they enter the next stage, the other forces, pre-operational stage. Now, I've given you an idea of the age is approximate, birth to 2 years, for the sensory motor, maybe birth to 18 months, 2 to 6 years, that's approximate, okay? It's not always the same in all children, but it gives you a rough idea of the ages associated with these triggers. The pre-operational stage is a very interesting one. Children can now begin to think with symbols. They begin to communicate, they get language. They begin to understand numbers in rudimentary ways. They can use mental maps to figure out where they are and follow instructions, plans. They can think ahead and do all of these things involve using mental symbols. But, as it's shown, their thinking is often full of errors. They don't think in a consistent, systematic, and logical way. That is what happens in the next stage. Roughly coinciding with primary school years. So for about 6 to 10 years, children move on to the next step, and they enter what he calls the concrete operational stage. Now, mental operations, that's simply Piaget's name, logical processes of thinking, reasoning. Okay, so he uses this term operations. The preschool kid is pre-operational, because they don't have these logical processes for reasoning, but the school kid, primary school kid, is able to think logically and therefore has these mental operations. This is what develops. And he actually calls them concrete because what characterizes this stage is the ability of children to think about concrete things, things that they can see and touch and handle and point to. What's lacking is an understanding of abstract concepts. Hypothetical concepts. That marks out the final endpoint, the final stage of development, which emerges around 10, 11 years of age. A lot of variability in the appearance of this stage. It could just depend on schooling, so literate people often don't enter this stage at all. But it's characterized by the ability to think about abstract concepts. Truth, justice, the American way of children begin to understand in the abstract form operational stage. So we've got these four stages of development. Children move from one to another, and around these times, as I said, they're approximate. It can be accelerated in some kids, delayed in others. The sequence, however, is important. Let me just give you a little bit more of a flavor of what each of these stages involves. So these things are the first three stages. And I think it's quite nice to develop them. So the toy is a bit of a tuck, one side or another, lifting cups. If you don't learn anything else, you'll learn about many good toys to give your kids. Because you invest in a set of nesting cups when you have a baby, and the child will be able to play with these until 6 or 7. But what's interesting is if you look at the way they play, the play undergoes radical changes as child moves through these different stages. So let's take a sensory motor baby, a 6-month-old. Get the 6-month-old to cut. 6-month-old can control reaching, can reach accurately, okay? Her hand towards the cup will pick it up. What happens next? Goes straight to the mouth. He goes straight to the mouth. Then it comes out again. It's very lucky working with babies. And then you get this kind of banging. We know that I was talking to a colleague of mine from the States in the summer, who's done a lot of research on this kind of tap and banging, exploratory behavior babies engage in. They look at the baby cup, they turn it over. What they do is they explore it, they find about its properties, its shape, color. Color's not very interesting to a baby, but its shape, how it feels, what you can do with it. And this is sensory motor exploration. They're looking, they're listening, they're touching, and they're acting. Okay? So they explore it in a sensory motor way. As babies get older, they can do more complex things. So, for example, a 6-month-old, if you offer a second cup, they'll drop the first one and take the second. Managing two at the same time is really difficult. By 9 months, babies can easily hold two together. And then they start to explore their properties, their relationships So it still said to Moses, it gets more and more complex. He actually charted the course of this development very closely in his own children. So he's got very elegant descriptions which have been backed up by more recent research. By 12 months, babies get very interested in one of the properties here, containment. They like to fit things inside the mother. Anyone in contact at the moment with a sort of 12, 15 month old? Okay, let's see if you recognize this scenario. One thing you never ever do if you've got a 12, 15 month old crawling around is empty all the rubbish bins without checking first what's inside them. Because, does that sound familiar? Yes, yeah, right, okay. Because babies are fascinated by some property objects and they like to explore containment. And a waste bin is just great for dropping everything, all those valuable toys that you've got.
So it's a video.
But all this is centered in motor. Okay? He actually charted the course of this development in his own children. In the other stages, he studied many, many kids in schools and nurseries, but for the sensory motor period, he followed the development of his own three children on a daily basis. He had very detailed, accurate records of what happened, and he gave them lots of interesting tests. And he noticed, at around 18 months, in all of his kids, something interesting happened. Give them a cup, and you see this sort of thing. Child takes it to her mouth, and then she goes, And that's very special. Piaget argued that behavior marks a whole new stage in development. It's not the simple exploration, sensory motor exploration of the cup that we saw with the other kids. This is pretend. This is using the cup in a pretend activity. The activity is a symbol. It stands for something else. It represents something else. The cup represents the cup of juice. And the baby is pretending to drink. And what the baby is doing is, instead of reacting, responding to the physical properties of the object, which is what she's been doing up to now, she's now imposing her own ideas, her own thoughts, onto the object. So she's using it in an imaginative way. She has a mental representation of the activity, drinking, and the cup is a prop in that activity. A whole new stage of development. Piaget argued that heralds the entrance to this next stage, moving up a step on the staircase, the pre-operational stage. And you see a whole load of changes related to the ability to use mental stimulus. One of the great things is logic. You've got a two-year-old, two-and-a-half-year-old, try this. Not only do young children engage in pretense themselves, they can now begin to understand pretense in another person. So suppose you take a cup, okay, and then you reach for an imaginary jug of juice, and you pour it into the cup, put the jug down, okay, and then do that. Okay? Now do that to a 12-month-old, they just look at you, and they want the cup so they can chew it. Do that to a 2-year-old, and they get upset. Some of them will go off and stop. Now there's nothing there, there's no juice, I have no jug. Okay? It's imaginary. What's different? The reason for the different reaction is that the older child, the 2-year-old, can understand the pretense. Understand that these activities, this object, is simply is a symbol. It stands for something else, not the object that they're trying to explore for its own sake. See the difference? And Piaget was absolutely right that this is a very challenging step forward. And the second point, one interesting feature is they form a series. There's a nice order to them. And 3-4-year-olds can be nervous. And if you lay them out like this, you can stare at the feature out. And then you take away and give a set to the child and ask them to lay them out in a series, to see them, so the biggest one is here, the smallest one is here. What happens? 3-4-year-olds have some growing understanding of the logical properties of this ordered sequence. And what they tend to do is they'll take one part and put them side by side. You get these pairings. Piaget is the first to discover this. So, again, part of the answer, big one here, but it can't fit the whole volume together. Then it's going to lead to another cup of and another cup. Big one is white based, relative to the small one, but it can't fit them all together in a series. They don't have the logical understanding, they don't have the reasoning ability to figure out how the series works. Four or five-year-olds can make better progress. Because what they can do is have a strategy. They put two cups side by side, and they'll put another one there, and they'll check. And second around, if they look wrong. And then look at another one, check, and switch them around if they look wrong, and so on. So the five-year-old is doing better, keeping things together and making series, but it's done by trial and error. It's done by acting on the sequence. It's not done mentally. She can't mentally figure out what the series ought to look like. She can't plan it ahead of time. Because she doesn't have the operational ability, according to Piaget, she doesn't have the reasoning ability to figure out how the series has to be organized. She doesn't understand that every cup has to be smaller than the one next to it and at the same time bigger than this other one. And that is the change you see at around 6 or 7 years of age. Ask a 7 or 8 year old to do this and they'll immediately start placing the cups in the right position. So, same set of toys, big changes in how children react to them. And those changes reflect differences in their cognitive abilities. And those differences map on to stages that Piaget discovered and was the first to describe. Sensory motor, pre-operational, cognitive operational. I stopped there, we haven't got all operational things yet. So, some interesting changes, very easy to replicate. Most of Piaget's observations are spot on. You can go out and test children today, and you can reproduce the behavior that he observed. He makes a number of interesting claims about the nature of development, how to move through these stages. The first is that each later stage is constructed out of the previous one. So there are gradual changes, and eventually the child enters a new stage. What that claim means is that children cannot skip a stage. You can't go from the sensory motor stage, infancy, to having some logical understanding which is characteristic of the concrete operational stage. You've got to pass through that intermediate stage to get from infancy to concrete operation. You cannot skip a stage. Okay? And think about it, this provides an interesting way of testing Piaget's theory. Because if we can get evidence that children have understanding and abilities, cognitive abilities, earlier than they should, if they didn't, we start to say, then we can criticize his theory. We can claim that there's something wrong with this belief. Second, the changes Piaget is talking about are qualitative. There are big changes in the way the methods of children think about things. From not having the ability to form symbolic representations, and yet speaking in symbols, that's a major change. It's not a quantitative change, it's not just that kids are getting faster or more accurate. It's a whole new way of thinking. So the worldview of the child, the beliefs, their understanding changes radically as they move from one stage to the next. They're qualitative changes, not quantitative. The changes are fairly abrupt. So they're not spread out over years. They occur in a matter of weeks, maybe months. They don't occur overnight. Okay? So a baby doesn't go to bed one night in the sensory motor stage and then suddenly, mental representations you wake up in the pre-operational stage. It is spread out, it gradually occurs. Okay? But not over a period of years. So they are fairly abrupt transitions. You can stop them happening. And another big claim of Piaget, all of the child's cognition is affected by this change. So it's a radical change which affects everything that the child is doing and understanding. Everything changes at the same time in some kind of secret. And that again is a very big claim. It's one that's been investigated. In fact, it's one where we find a lot of counter-evidence. It does appear that the changes occur in some areas, but not in others. Development seems to be much more fragmented than the other claim. That's what he believed. That was his view. And finally, he claims these changes are universal. What he thought he was doing was describing logical development of reasoning and thinking. How these abilities could develop from infancy, no knowledge of the world, no symbolic function, to concrete and formal thinking. And they're universal. All children will inevitably go through these changes. And certainly there's quite a bit of evidence as we move from one culture to another. You can see, you know, children producing these changes in the same kinds of sequences. The rate may differ. The rate may be influenced by environmental factors. The sequence is very much similar. So that's a little overview of Piaget's theory. What I'm going to do now, is talk about the very first thing, Piaget's idea about infancy in the sensory motor period. And when you do this, there are three important claims that Piaget made about the nature of cognition in infancy. This is what Piaget believes that infants cannot do. First of all, he says, babies are born with no understanding of the world at all. They have no innate knowledge. Everything that the child knows, the baby knows, that you know, has to be learned, has to be constructed, has to be acquired. There is no knowledge at birth. There are a few basic functions, but no knowledge. Second, he argued infant behavior is egocentric. It's centered on the self. It's not egotistical, it's not selfish. It may appear that way, especially if you get woke up at 3 in the morning, but it's not. It's egocentric, self-centered. I'll give you a better explanation in a moment. Just keep that in mind, okay? I want to see exactly what Piaget means by this. He has a very special meaning. It's very important to understand it. And finally, as I've already mentioned, infants cannot use mental symbols or representations. They don't have symbolic function. That's a big limitation. And you have to wait 18 months to learn before you can develop that ability. So let's just take a look at each of these claims to see what he's saying. This first one, babies have no innate knowledge. Piaget argued they have no concept at birth of space, physical freedom of space around them, of time, of causality, of one thing may cause another to happen, physical causation. Certainly they have no concept of number. And probably his biggest claim, one of the most important claims, they have no concept of object permanence. Babies, young infants, don't understand that the world, the objects in it, remain, continue to exist, even though they can't perceive them any longer. Even though they go out of sight or they disappear from view. So, you know, shut your eyes. I shut my eyes. I know you're all still there and disappeared. The actual saying, babies, young babies, don't have that concept. Okay? Turn around, I know you're still there. The same babies don't understand that. Hide the toy. Hide the toy, you know enough. Okay? Babies have no recollection that it continues to exist. They don't have this concept of objects being permanent, even though they've gone out of sight, can't even see. Sensory motor worlds are outside without sight. So that's a major claim. And he argues that this knowledge and the development of concept is gradually acquired by exploring the world, by observing and acting. Seeing what the effects of actions are. That's what is going on in the first 2 years of life. So that's a big claim. Here's an example of something that Piaget argues is not innate. This knowledge of what we call sign consciousness. Now, you look at this scene here. What you see is this figure, this man here, this one here. And because of the background information, you know these two are the same size. Okay? If in fact we look much smaller. But we understand that that doesn't represent the physical world out there. We don't perceive this guy as this little fellow here. We perceive him as the same. He actually asked a question, as psychologists and philosophers have done for many years. What is the understanding of young people? How would they be perceived like this? And he argued they have no way of interpreting. They may see one bit as bigger than the other, smaller, same size. Nothing consistent, no way of knowing what this really means. And he claims that it's through acting on the world that babies begin to understand that objects retain their size even though they move around in space. And he argued that they do it in this kind of behavior, which he observed a lot in his own children. As soon as they could start holding objects, they were doing this kind of thing. Moving a toy to and fro, and he argued that's what's giving them the information. It feels the same size. The visual image is changing, the retinal image is changing. They can calibrate one with the other and figure out that it actually is constant in size. So they do it for near space, first of all, and once they start crawling around, then they do it for far space. So because they can move around from one place to another, then they begin to figure out that, you know, people far away are not kind of tiny little people, but in fact retain their size. So he argues that understanding of size constancy develops gradually during the first year of life for exploring the world. We'll see some new research on that and see whether we can get a better answer to the question. Here's another piece of knowledge we all have. We know the properties of solid objects. Two solid objects cannot occupy the same space. One cannot pass through another. And magicians, of course, exploit that understanding as they interpret it. Now, here are two events, okay? Can you see them, okay? Well, let me just describe it. A rat here attached to a screen. Now, if you look at the screen, what you can see behind is a solid block at the back of the stage, okay? We're going to screen down, and then a truck is going to roll down the ramp, across the track, behind the screen, come out the other side. Fine. Okay? Possible event. Nothing trickery. No trickery involved there. Here is an impossible event. Same screen, but this time the solid block is resting on the track. Okay? Now the screen comes out, truck appears, rolls down the ramp, goes behind the screen, and comes out the other side. Now, if I set that up here and produce that effect, you would be not only impressed, you would be puzzled, maybe, how I did it, and your puzzlement comes from the fact that you have knowledge about the properties of solid objects. One solid object, the truck, shouldn't pass through space occupied by another solid object, the block. Okay? Now, get it right that young kids, 3, 4, 5 months old, who haven't had experience of handy objects, and discovered the properties of solid objects, if they lack that knowledge, they're not born with this understanding, they will be puzzled by this impossible event here. They won't see it any different from the possible event. Yeah? Well, we're going to look at some research which has that claim. And in fact, some researchers have argued that this type of knowledge is innate. We have evidence that it's certainly there in the knowledge. Okay, let's go on to his second claim, that it is existential. Yashin is arguing here that babies understand the world around them from their own point of view, their own perspective. Because they lack this permanent object concept, they believe that the existence of the world depends upon themselves. In fact, they create the world. Shut their eyes, it disappears. Open their eyes, it comes back into existence. Everything is centered upon themselves. And one of the tasks and challenges of infancy is to unlearn or to get rid of that understanding and replace it with a realistic view that the world is independent of the child itself. It exists and operates completely independent of the child. So Piaget argues that children, babies, really treat actions and objects acted upon as one and the same thing. The action creates the object. So a baby reaches for a cup, thinks of the action and the cup as exactly the same thing. terms of acting upon an object that's external to themselves. They don't conceive of the world in that way. The action, the activity, and wanting are the same. And again, he goes to Edward's personality, a very curious piece of behavior, which he argued shows very clearly what he means by infidelocentrism. By about 8 or 9 months, babies can search for hidden objects. Okay, so if you hide a toy on the cover and let the baby reach, they'll pick up the cover and they'll find the toy that's been hidden. Now, Piaget didn't think that's because they've suddenly developed a permanent object concept. I'll explain why in a later lecture. Just bear with me. Okay. So a baby searches, and to search accurately, you have two cameras side by side. Hide the toy under A, baby will find the toy. Okay. If you then hide the toy under B, baby wait a moment, and then let them search, what happens? What happens is, the baby goes back to the original cover. They go back to A, even though they just see the toy in the B. This is all search. Still, you didn't die. He came to collapse some while ago, and we took some shots for a textbook. And here you can see the age of these are cloth covers. He's ripped off the cover, he's found the toy, he's about to pounce on it. Okay. Here's a B one. Now I've hidden the toy under cover B. There's a big lock there. Okay. Doesn't matter. He's gone back to the original cover. And he's picked that up. And all babies will make this error. And it's very funny. Fortunately, his mum is pretty funny as well. My mum feels a bit worried about it, but everyone produces this error. Why is it? Here's Gadget's explanation. Babies at this stage don't have a permanent object concept. They believe they create everything. What they have learned is that their actions can make things work. Make things happen. Okay. So, you hide the toy, and it's gone out of existence. They have no idea it's there. You can't recall it, can't think about it. But what they've discovered through fooling around and playing is, when they do this, they can create the toy. Okay? So this action, reaching to this place, creates the toy. So even if it's hidden in place, if you want the toy to play with it, you recreate it by repeating the same action. And of course you get this error. And this is where the child baby's eccentricism is banging up against reality. And something has to give, because what gives is the child's understanding. And gradually he begins to get a realistic view about how the world works. It would be nice if life was like that. Imagine you go to a cash machine, you just punch in euro, and out comes the money, because life was like that. Reality doesn't work that way. There are other factors that can be. Question. Where are you? Yeah. Sorry, I can't hear. It's a bit bad echo. Right. How does the child know to look under something? They learn through playing with toys. Through discovery. This is what they're doing when they're fiddling around with all the toys that they've got. A lot of experiences. This is one of the common properties of everyday life. Things get covered and things get uncovered. And they have to learn how to manipulate objects in different ways. Covers, cups have to be manipulated in special ways. That's what's going on between 4, 5, 6, 7 months to the point when they can begin to search. Okay? So that's why giving babies the opportunity to play in the school world is really important. This problem continues, even though they're beginning to make progress, they still have faulty understanding. You see that, Okay, this is the third and final point that Piaget makes. And his third study about nationalism is that infants lack the capacity for mental representation. Okay? Now, mental representation, the ability to think with symbols, is very special because it frees us from the here and now. It means we can recall things from the past and we can think and plan ahead to the future. So, for example, you're sitting here in the lecture room. Suppose I ask you to think about your home, your flat, wherever. Okay. Imagine you're standing in front of the sitting room door. Door's closed. Okay. You know, picture yourself in your mind. You can imagine what it's like. The door now rolls open. Okay. Opens up, and you look ahead. You can see things. Yeah. Everybody has a different image. You've all got a different map, mental map. You all have a different representation. But I can ask you now to imagine walking from the doorway to the opposite wall, okay? Take a mental walk through your mental room. Now, some of you maybe could go directly. Others, you realize there are things in the way. You've furnished a dog lying there. You've got to take a mental detour, okay? And you've got to figure out how to do it. So, this power of representation allows us to think about, recall things from the past, that are distant and separate in time and space, okay? And also plan ahead to the future. We can imagine, you know, how many things happen, we can solve problems mentally using our mental representations. He actually argued that all of that is unavailable to infants. It happens in the next stage, but not in infancy. Infants can recognize things, but they cannot recall. They cannot retrieve information from memory. There's nothing there to remind them. And they can't think ahead to the future. They can't plan. They can't solve problems by planning. They live in a here and now world. And that, of course, only develops at around 18 months. So this is one of the claims the engineers made. As I mentioned, babies don't have contact with object permanence. They can't recognize objects that are going outside. He argued that the object is a mere image that re-enters the void as soon as it vanishes, and emerges from it for no objective reason. So we cover the toy, it's gone. Babies have no way of remembering the toy. Yes, they discover that if they do something, reach out and grab the screen and pull it away, they can recreate the toy, but they don't think about it as continuing to exist, and they're removing the cover, bringing it back into sight. That's what they don't understand. They believe its existence depends upon their perception of the object. Sensory, motor state, no mental representation. Removed the screen, brought it back into existence. Covered it up, it's gone out of existence. Okay? Very strange world. Very scary, kind of frightening world. Clearly something that they have to move on to show progression if they can achieve anything in today's life. Now obviously that's a big challenge, and one that developmental psychologists have responded to, and in the next few lectures we're going to look at more recent research that examines this claim in a whole variety of individuals. Sorry, what was the time? 5 o'clock? I'm just finishing now. I'm on the front. Okay, so we'll finish there. I look at the whole study about the development of mental representations. We'll finish that tomorrow, and then we'll move on.